Where I see the huge opportunities would be making sure as a minimum that as an agent, you're having video marketing, because that is where all your customers are and they're all consuming video. So you should be creating video market updates and reports and news on a regular basis. And I know there are services out there for that industry that have sprung up in the last 10 years that go around and film. But there's no reason you can't do it using the equipment we have here. And I'm recording this on an iPhone on a tripod with a light. That is all you need to be present for your audience.
You are listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. Each episode, we bring you the best minds in business and real estate to help you list more, sell more, and elevate your results. To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching, and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate podcast. I'm Mark Edwards from Elite Agent.
And I'm Samantha McLean from the same place.
That is excellent news.
I know.
We have got an awesome guest this week.
We do have an awesome guest, and we've had some, we've had some super guests in 2019 in the studio. So Wayne Pearce, the rugby league player. We've had Lisa Messenger in here. Mm-hmm. We've had Perry Marshall. That was a pretty big moment for me, having one of my own coaches in here.
Jimmy Macken
from Curator. That was a fantastic episode. And this one is going to prove to be a really good one as well. So James Schramko, he is an Australian online business coach.
Super fast business.
He used to be a car salesman. And then mm-hmm. you're going to hear in this podcast how he transitioned from being a car salesman into his online coaching communities, which he's like more than 3,000 students of his have created six-figure, seven-figure, eight-figure incomes.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing, isn't it?
From online businesses. Yep. And everyone looks at real estate as a traditional bricks and mortar type business. But I have a theory for you, Mark.
What's that?
I think real estate agents will be earning a lot more money online in the future through creating different joint venture deals with suppliers and different tribes within the community and things like that. And we talked about this 5 years ago in that little report called Get Ready for 2020.
How crazy is that? You know, at the time we were thinking flying cars, teleporters.
Yeah, no, we weren't thinking that.
No, I was.
That was Back to the Future. That was a movie you watched. I do remember us talking about a different type of commission model, though, mm-hmm. where you might not necessarily be charging for the sale of
a
property,
purveyor of services,
but you may be charging about being a purveyor of services, which is really interesting, actually. So I thought we'd get James onto this podcast because I wanted to ask one of the best online business coaches in the world, because he is, I would say, I'd put him at that level. He has a podcast, he has a video series, he has a membership.
Like close to 700 episodes on his podcast.
Yeah, and well, we thought getting it past 100 was good, but yes, 700. And I love his podcast as well. Like, you know, some great takeaways in it.
He does run a global business. I think at the time when we were talking to him, he was in the Philippines. So we were struggling a little bit with the audio there. But I'll tell you what, the value that was coming out of the content that James was so generously sharing is just absolute golden.
Yeah, so we kicked off with something that'll be close to everyone's hearts in real estate. So we did talk about some of the online opportunities for real estate agents as, let's just call them, adjacent business models. But we also talked about this thing called effective hourly rate, which is really interesting because in real estate, we talk a lot about outsourcing. What things do you outsource? And we talked a lot about this in Transform also earlier this year. And James has this really great formula for working out what you should outsource and what you shouldn't. And it's all based on your effective hourly rate. So that is, you take your profit and you work out how many hours a week you work per year, and then you divide one by the other. So if you make $100,000 in profit and you work 50 hours a week, you divide $100,000 by 2,600 and you get something around $48 an hour. Mm. And that gives you your effective hourly rate. And so the whole idea behind James's memberships is that you really want to increase your effective hourly rate. So there are a couple of ways of doing that, I suppose. One is make more profit, and the second is work less hours. Mm-hmm. And so in this podcast, we kind of go through the options for both, which is, you know, making more money, working less hours.
He goes into it a lot of detail in his book, Work Less, Make More.
So as usual, that's all been captured in our action guides so that you can actually go ahead and, well, calculate your own effective hourly rate as per what James talks about.
And it is a really simple calculation.
It's a simple formula.
But grab the show notes at eliteagentelevate.com. Put your email address in there and over the internet, the show notes will come swinging towards you.
Yep.
And if you actually want to sort of like get more out of it, you can even subscribe to Extra, where we'll bundle them up in a 40-page newsletter every month and send them through to you. And that will include all of the podcasts from the month and also a couple of extra bonus lessons there as well.
Well, that's why we like to call it Extra.
It is.
Because
it's extra.
Yeah. So, yeah, so pretty amazing chat with James. Like, he is one of the best business brains that I think I've come across in my career, certainly. Yeah, some great stories in this. So enjoy the show. Welcome to the podcast, James Schramko.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's awesome to have someone like you on the podcast. I mean, you're one of Australia's most well-known, well, actually, you're known throughout the world as an online business coach. You've got a couple of amazing communities in Silver Circle and Superfast Business. We know you from Manly. So can we kick off this interview by getting you to tell us something we don't know about you?
When I was a kid, my parents used to restore vintage cars and we would go on rallies around rural New South Wales. So that gave me a good insight into the way other people live. I think that was a good education. That was of the non-academic type.
Is that where the need for speed comes from, like with the super fast business sort of thing?
According to my parents, I was in a little play cot with my own set of tools in my dad's garage when I was a baby. So he was working on cars and I was working on my pretend cars next to him. So I always had a mechanical inclination and I could very well have become an auto mechanic. And I was interested in cars throughout my youth and obviously it became part of my career when I went into the automotive industry a couple of times, firstly through finance and then secondly in the sales marketing side of things and then management. But yeah, I think that it must have been there from an early age. We also used to visit my family friends who live on the Bathurst racetrack. Like they literally lived Oh, wow. On Mountain Street. So every year we'd go up there and I'd walk down to the front of the property right behind a barricade next to a tree, not more than 10 feet from the cars doing a couple of hundred kilometres an hour up that straight, you know, full noise V8s. So I definitely like the sound of a good V8.
Yeah, and the smell of petrol.
Yeah, there's something about it. And I ended up doing some jobs that involved driving. Some days I'd do up to 500 kilometres as a field rep for General Motors Finance. So did a lot of driving in my early years.
Now you've got a couple of online communities, so that's Silver Circle and Superfast Business. How did those coaching communities start? Like how did you go from being in a bricks and mortar business, say, for example, you were managing a Mercedes-Benz dealership, into the online world?
So I got some indicators that the online thing's going to be important. I first had a look at it in the mid-90s and it was very slow and difficult and obviously the US was a bit further ahead of where Australia was at. And then I lost interest in it for a while, for about 10 years. And then in the mid-2000s, I had noticed that a lot of people coming into the dealership really educated about the product lines and what's coming before we were told from the manufacturer. My parents by this stage had a tough time with the travel industry because a lot of people started to book their own travel and squeeze out the agent. So things were changing. And I was good at sales and marketing, but I found the territorial brand requirements of only selling in your prime market area, like a 20 or 30 kilometer radius, very restrictive. I thought, wouldn't it be good if I could apply my knowledge to sell things online anywhere in the world, you know, 24/7. And then, of course, I got sort of sucked into some of the thinking of virtual business, don't have to have a team or stock or staff or a facility and, you know, it can be very automated and leveraged. And it was one step away from push button riches, I suppose. They did make it sound a bit easier than what it turned out to be.
Mm.
And a lot of people were selling those sort of products. But the more I looked into it, the more I realized is you've got to have an actual business. So the transition for me was trying to figure out how to build a website. It was a huge struggle. And eventually I did find some software that made it easy. And I thought there must be other people like me who are struggling to build a website. So I set about focusing on finding those people. I targeted them with my website and my offer. And then I went out to the market and eventually I started to make a few sales here and there and I kept building it up. And then I realized that this affiliate offer that I was selling wasn't my product or service. was, again, a little bit restrictive, thinking if I could have my own products or services. So I started creating information products to support people who already had a website. And then I started helping people who were driving offers to their campaigns. And there was this big course that was coming out teaching people how to be super affiliates. And I realized that people will buy the course but not know how to implement it. So I offered them support. I said, look, if you buy the course from me, I will get a commission. So what I'll do is I'll set up a membership and I'll coach you through the course as the modules are rolled out to make sure you can apply this and get a result. And I sold nearly 80 of those. The course was $2,000. I got $1,000 commission per sale. And that was the start of my membership. I put all of those people into a membership on a 60-day trial. And if they wanted to stay after that, they could for $65 a month. And most of them did. And that was about 11 years ago. And that's how my membership started.
Amazing. And I think that problem still exists today where there's a lot of information products out there which people buy and then they do nothing with. So it's really interesting that you say that you've actually built your businesses on handholding, really showing people step by step how to use the thing that you're selling.
That was all I wanted when I started online, was for someone to show me what they're actually doing. They were all smoke and mirrors. Mm. No one would tell me what they're doing. No one would show me how it works. They would just give me all these promises and dreams, but then the content was thin. I had to piece it all together myself. And really the core of what I offer people now is, like, even leaders need leaders. So I've targeted specifically with Silver Circle. I've found a lot of the leaders in our industry and I help them, because what they're missing usually is the fundamentals that it took to run a Mercedes-Benz dealership. As a general manager, I learned a lot of the core strengths that you need to have with a significant business, especially human resources things, running a team, like hiring, recruiting, training, leadership, systems, financials, understanding your numbers and being able to interpret what's happening with your business and making good strategic choices and fending off disaster at every turn. So there's a lot that goes into it at that level. And most of those people are really good at the thing they do, but they need a lot of help with the infrastructure to carry them.
I think you've just described leadership in 2020 or 2019 to a T, in that leaders have got to be all things to all people. And I think too, in the real estate industry, and I know, you know, work-life balance is a passion of yours, that can lead to, I have to be all things to all people. So I'm going to turn myself inside out, trying to find out what the next big thing is and managing my people over there and worrying about listings and sales over there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So before we get into that, I've had a look at your book, Work Less, Make More, and I would really love to delve into that a bit. Tell me what your day looks like now, even though you're managing up to 3,000 students at a time and doing all this other stuff. What does your day look like?
Today, for example, is a work day for me. It's a Tuesday. So on Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday, I block a morning segment and an afternoon segment to do external things. That could be attend a podcast, or it could be to speak to a high-level client of mine. And I do some group calls with my trainings as well. So that will always happen on Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday. On Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, there's no appointments booked, zero. I really want 4 days off and 3 days on. And because I spread my morning block and my afternoon block out, like by 5, 6, 7, or 8 hours, I really like I get enough time off during the day to do family things, meals, travel, whatever we need to do. And pretty much every day, unless I'm traveling, I'll be surfing as well. Usually that happens mid-morning through to mid-afternoon. Try and wait till everyone goes to work or school. Also, I do sometimes go traveling for surf as well, which I enjoy a lot.
So someone listening to this would be thinking, well, that's great for him, but in real estate, everyone always says, but my market's different. And there's probably people here thinking real estate is different, but we're going to look at how you can possibly work less and make more by implementing some of the things that were in your book, which is available on Amazon.com. We'll leave some links to the show notes. There are many great concepts in the book. The one that was critical, I thought, was calculating your EHR.
Look, most employees know their hourly wage. So if you're an employee, then your hourly wage is probably your effective hourly rate. If you're the owner, that becomes a bit murky. So what I like to do is have a look at the revenue, subtract out all the costs, which could be all your software, your team, your office, your rent, et cetera, commissions. Then what's left is your profit before your wage. And then you divide that by how many hours you work. and that's your effective hourly rate. So for a lot of the people I'm coaching, we're trying to target $500 effective hourly rate for them. But at a higher level, you can get past $1,000 per hour. And that's controlled by a couple of factors. One is like how much you earn, and the other is how many hours you work. If you're a real estate agent thinking, oh, well, you know, it's the market or whatever, one way to increase your effective hourly rate is to list down everything you're actually doing and identify all the things that someone else could do. I don't know if you're putting up your own signboards or whatever, but if you could get someone to do that for a lower amount than your effective hourly rate, then you could save all that time. If you could hire someone to do the listings, and you could hire someone to do the sellings, and you could hire someone to do all the paperwork, then you wouldn't have that many things left to do, except for keep an eye open for marketing trends, see where the opportunities are, do some high-level networking, look at other markets as well. I mean, so much you could do virtually with real estate anyway. Like, there's probably whole countries like Spain, for example, where there must be a lot of people desperately trying to sell property and they don't have a clue how to do it locally or online. I know in Australia, we get a lot of overseas people looking at properties in Australia. So you could develop one of those markets, perhaps. You could establish relationships with developers or new buying groups. So you could definitely look outside your industry and see what other people are doing. That's one of my favorite techniques I learned from Jay Abraham, to cross-pollinate best practice from somewhere else. The problem with the real estate industry is the real estate industry. You know, you should get outside that to get fresh ideas. When I was in the car industry, the problem with the car industry was the car industry. They just did everything the same. They were homogenized. And when I started bringing ideas from outside the industry, it was very fresh. We were able to transform things in the same market as all the other dealerships. We went from last to first with our customer satisfaction score with the manufacturer, by bringing in outside ideas.
Interesting. So I did some numbers actually in preparation for this podcast. Numbers being, I tried to listen to nearly all 700 episodes of your podcast, but didn't quite get there. But according to the Australian Census, 2016, the last Australian Census was, a higher end wage for an agent, the average higher end wage was $90,000 per annum. Most would work, according to the census again, 50 hours per week, which again, we know is probably a bit on the low side. So I think the wage is a bit on the high side. The hours per week are a bit on the low side. And when you divide 96,000 by 2,600 hours per year, I get an effective hourly rate of $34 per hour. So basically what you're saying, from what I can gather in the book, is that number one, if you reduce your working hours, like reduce that hourly rate, then your effective hourly rate goes up. But also, if you have a look at that number of $34 and think if you can get that job done for $34 or less, then it is worth outsourcing.
Correct. And you'll start to increase your effective hourly rate.
Yeah.
So, you know, are you stuffing envelopes? I don't know. It always interests me, but they, you know, they have to drive around all Saturday and open houses and stuff. That's interesting. Well, could they shorten the time it takes to sell a property? I was just involved in a transaction. I was able to make happen much faster than the planned schedule. But that agent can get on to selling the next place now, because that one's finished. It's closed. So, like, there must be things you can do. Can you attract a better type of property that sells much faster? We used to look at those things in the car dealership. We had a stock matrix, and it was a guide whether we would keep or whether we would wholesale a trade-in. And if it was a car that we would keep, we could bid a little more on it, pay more for it, because we knew it would sell quickly. The accountants went through all the things we'd ever sold, and they said, oh, okay, well, if you get this type of car in this color, it will sell 10 times faster than this type of car in that color. And so getting some knowledge behind that is good. Obviously, you're in a key relationships game, but there's a lot you can do with leverage online to build your profile and relationships. If you can have a ready buyers list to quickly purchase properties to get listed, if you can have a list of properties you can go to list before they decide to go and speak to five other agents, then you're going to maximize your opportunities.
In real estate, where you very much live or die by your commission check or your management fee, if you happen to be in property management, there are a lot of agents that think that that might be all there is. And you've just opened up my eyes to the possibility that there could be a whole bunch of other stuff available online. Like, for example, using your digital marketing skills to help people in Spain or somewhere like that. Do you think in the future, like, you know, with everyone saying the real estate industry is going to be disrupted, do we all need to become good digital marketers?
We should be aware of it. When I sold a house about 10 years ago, I did a digital campaign that blew them away for my own house. I was able to get the most eyeballs. It was the most viewed property on the homepage of a significant franchise in Sydney, which at the time was McGrath's. And it also was coming up for every search. It was even outranking the domains and the real estate sites at the time, whatever they were, with the basics. So in the last 10 years, a lot of people have bridged the gap. Where I see the huge opportunities would be making sure as a minimum that as an agent, you're having video marketing, because that is where all your customers are and they're all consuming video. So you should be creating video market updates and reports and news on a regular basis. And I know there are services out there for that industry that have sprung up in the last 10 years that go around and film. But there's no reason you can't do it using the equipment we have here. And I'm recording this on an iPhone on a tripod with a light. That is all you need to be present for your audience. And if you analyze your database, you'll find the database is not equal. There'll be hyper customers. There would be hyper buyers who, if you just reach out to them with the right opportunity, would buy. And so it's a matter of staying really connected with them. So I would definitely pay attention to best practice for digital marketing, because that's where the new people are going to come in and just decimate the dinosaurs.
I think, too, there are lessons that can be learned from digital marketers and online businesses, too, in that I think real estate agents fall victim to just sending emails of listing after listing after listing without actually building a relationship. So some of them might put a lead magnet or something like that online, but then that is to get an email address to get listings. What would be your tip to start building relationships with people online rather than just kind of sending them what you've got on the books?
Look, having been through the process a few times, and I'll say when people come to the open, like the first thing that happens is you get slammed in the face with an iPad and they want your details. That's a cold, harsh process, yeah. Right? It starts there. They really drop the ball right at that point. It becomes super transactional, and then you may or may not get a follow-up call on the Monday. It's just so typical, but definitely you'll get some kind of email if they're half professional, unless the market's hot, in which case they dump you like a hot potato. If the market's hot, you'll never hear from them. When the market goes cold, they start calling. I've had people call me a year and a half after I was looking at a property because the market cooled right off and now they were looking for leads. I'm like, are you actually kidding? A year and a half and now I'm worth a phone call.
Yeah.
I'm not precious, but I am aware of how shallow that is. You know, so start off on the right foot. Get the interaction being smooth, but I would most definitely on your printout material, like those high quality printouts that are on the kitchen table of the property and those things, you should definitely list your social media there. And you should be doing like every single day, uploading stories, walkthroughs, information about the area, things that would add a lot of value to someone who's in the market or interested or who might be thinking it's a good time to list with you or to sell. You've got to start cutting through and caring. So actually caring, that would be huge.
Yeah.
So yes, email is fine. They do send SMSs, etc. If you can encourage people to get onto your channel, which hopefully sort of an Instagram channel might be useful for real estate agents, then they'll get those push notifications when you update and it's not offensive. The other thing that I think is a huge opportunity would be Messenger. If you can get people into a Messenger interaction when they're in that buying phase. A lot of people are too scared to speak to a real estate agent because they find it scary. I think Messenger is a higher value than the email because it's more real time, but it's also less pushy than a phone call.
Yeah, I think people are starting to get comfortable now with messaging businesses via Facebook more so than they ever have been. I know people message me through our Facebook profile all the time. Is ManyChat still the thing that gets used? I mean, we don't have a chatbot, but
it is, I think, the most popular platform for sure.
Speaking of Facebook, there was a bit in your book that I read that, you know, you kind of recommend limiting time on Facebook because Facebook can be such a time waster. We ran a bit of an experiment with a group of agents earlier this year. We got them all off Facebook for an hour a day for 30 days. They all came out of it feeling amazing. There were a bunch of agents that absolutely couldn't do it because they kind of said, well, you know, we advertise our listings on Facebook and we've got to be on Facebook all day, every day. What would you say to that?
I'd separate whether you're being a consumer or whether you're being a creator. So there's two separate modes. I use Facebook as a creator, but my team are uploading and managing my Superfast business page. I'm not involved with that. They're managing. They tell me if someone comments or I need to attend it. So have someone on your team monitor it and let you know if you need to get there. The danger is if you're going in there on consumption mode, you use the excuse, so I'm just going to log in and check my listings. Okay, you do that, or maybe you don't even get that far. The next thing you see, videos or content that switches you to consumer mode, and then you just waste an hour and a half. It's much more interesting to do that than to phone up the prospects who looked through your property on last Saturday, you know, which I suspect is probably happening. It's got serious addictive qualities. I've interviewed experts on this topic. One of them actually wrote a book saying how hooked people become, and then he wrote a book giving the antidote, which is Genius Marketing. Nir Eyal is the author. And I think it's just something you've got to watch. I think people would be shocked to know how long they spend on social media. I suspect, I mean, the stats are that the average American is spending 6 hours watching videos per day. Right, so I suspect most Australians are spending an inordinate amount of time on their device or phone. You only have to go to a cafe or a park to see. People are buried in their phones. We'll just be aware of it. There are tools now. Your phone comes with standard software to track that. So get some insights going and see just how long do you spend and see if you're comfortable with that. And especially any parents, be careful about how much you're letting your kids have access to screens because they copy the adult.
Mm. Oh, yeah, I know. I've got a 17-year-old daughter doing the HSC right now. And, yeah, she gives me her phone now. She's been trained, you know, which is really, really good. Email is another really big distraction. Why is that?
Well, it's because it's the to-do list that other people get to add things to. Also, with the proliferation of email capture for opt-ins, people who are more entrepreneurial or tend to be marketing focused, I suspect they're logging on and joining and signing up and devouring just about anything they can find. And as a result, you end up with this big legacy list of email subscriptions. So I teach people who I'm coaching to create some rules and filters around what emails you actually get to see. You really only need to see the emails where an action is required. The other ones, like emails from other marketers, which you're getting because you want to research the market, put them to a review later type file so that you don't have to deal with them right now. Otherwise, you just get numbed. Again, people could sit there and spend 5-6 hours a day reading their emails, and that's really not that productive unless those emails are from buyers, which is the kind of email I want to see. A prospect sending me an email, I want. Someone planning to leave a subscription, I want that email. So I don't have any of my team emails in there. We use a different tool for that called Slack. I don't have general support things like how to update my credit card or I need to get my login details. They all go to my support desk and my team manage that. So the big wins for email are, firstly, be clear about how you got the problem in the first place. It's because you're subscribing to too many things. So unsubscribe and delete whatever's not giving you value. The second thing is set up a support system so that your team is handling the general stuff and it's not you. And also get your team off your email. So just keep your email. Really important stuff like, you know, renewing your business with ASIC or whatever. Those things, you need to get those emails. And they'll get drowned out if you're not careful.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing that I know that you have talked about a lot on your podcast is the topic of wellness and keeping yourself in top shape, because some of the stuff we've been talking about here is time management, whereas I know the phrase that you use a lot is energy management. So talk to me a little bit about your approach to health balance.
Well, you know, I worked too hard and too many hours. I was working 7 days a week and raising a family, 4 kids, and it was stressful. And I think my health started to suffer a little bit. Then as you get older, you just don't have the same energy as before. And then I discovered other things, like it turns out that I have a gluten intolerance. So when I would eat gluten, my body would just get really tired and bloated and my joints would be sore. So I thought, you know, what's wrong with me? Maybe I've got chronic fatigue or something. You know, as soon as I started getting blood tests, DNA tests, getting some help from people around me, when I talk about it on my podcast, interestingly enough, they all come out of the woodwork. And help. I like literally 7 or 8 people have been involved in my panel of health experts. And then you start surfing every day and making sure you get good sleep and breathing properly. I mean, as silly as it sounds, just closing your mouth is a big innovation for most people in terms of learning to breathe properly, because most people overbreathe. And I didn't realize that until in my mid-40s. All of those changes and cutting back on the work to 20 to 25 hours a week, which, by the way, my business is more profitable than it's ever been, and I work a fraction of what I used to work. So you can really take this leverage to a whole new level from where you're at, no matter how bad you think it is now and how much it sucks and how unrelatable my life must seem. I was in that position. I was in the exact position. You know, I was doing 7 day a week in my first sales job, making 73 grand a year. And I decided I wanted something better for myself. So I went for management, and then I went for my own business. So if you have your own business, that is a huge pathway to unlocking the game. If you're an employee, then at least maybe look at ways you could become a contractor or whatever. But when it comes to your health, just realize that that's probably the most important asset that we're putting on the back burner, you know, while we're busy hustling just to make that extra dollar. And it's really worth evaluating what's actually important to you. So, you know, part of work less, make more, it really is about differentiating from, hey, yes, you can work more and make more. But at a certain point, if you actually get a surplus of money, imagine if you're at the point where you make more than what you spend, and then you start to build up a little surplus of time, you've got time available to do whatever you want, then things like health and relationships really come into play. Like, okay, I'd like this body to last me a little longer than the way it was going to pan out before. If you go back 10 years ago, I wasn't feeling or looking that healthy compared to how I am right now.
I can relate to that so much too, because a year ago, actually, I had a terrible flu and I was laid off the podcast for 2 or 3 weeks and an important award ceremony because I couldn't talk, you know, so.
It's a sign. Your body's saying you're pushing me too much and you need to pull back a bit.
My husband was probably relieved that I couldn't talk for a while, but he would have been the only one. So someone might be listening to this at the moment. I mean, and I've just sort of glossed over my problems from last year, but, you know, like I found myself that I was feeling tired, run down, working 14-hour days, 7 days a week, until a guy by the name of Perry Marshall said, no, 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 you can take one day off at least. And you would know all about Perry and his teachings and stuff like that. But what would you say to someone who is doing the same thing right now, working 7 days a week, long hours, feeling lousy? What step would you make them take, just one step to getting on a better path?
Well, I think the first thing is just accepting that there could be a different way. If they're just really stoic and they love working like that, and maybe they're proud of it or something, they love it and they don't want to change, then there's nothing I could say to that person. I'd say good luck. If you enjoy it, great. If you're not happy about it, or at some point, basically dissatisfaction is what's going to build up to the point where you want to do something about it and you have to change, or your body blows up and forces you to change. That tends to happen. You know, you hear of people in their 30s or 40s dropping dead of a heart attack or whatever. They just didn't take the signs. So I'd say just write down everything you're doing and then score. How important is that really? A good chunk of the things you're doing are completely a waste of time. See, Perry Marshall is a big fan of Richard Koch. Richard Koch is the 80-20 guy. So we come from a similar sort of thinking source there regarding leverage, but not all tasks are equal. So only a few of the things you're doing, that 14 hours, are actually effective. And if any of that time you're also tooling around Facebook or watching Netflix or being less than focused, it's just a waste. You might as well just sleep. You literally get a better result if you sleep. And there's research on that. People who slept the night before a big exam instead of trying to cram get better scores. So I would say take some time out, at least block off an entire day where you do nothing to recover. But ideally, you put in hours each day for yourself, even during the middle of the day, 2 or 3 hours. It's really hard to do this when you're ingrained with some work ethic, and it probably comes from programming you had from your parents or your industry peers. There's no glory in being the first in and last out. It's glorified for some reason, but it just means that person doesn't have a handle on being effective. It should be shameful to be coming in first and leaving last. It should be a clear display that you just haven't got a clue about productivity. So accept that you need to change. Document everything you're doing on a big piece of paper or a whiteboard or post-it notes, and then separate them out. The absolutely critical things that must be done, the stuff that someone else could do, and the stuff that shouldn't be done at all that we just should be in and stop doing. And I've actually just stopped doing lots of things that I used to do, and it made no difference whatsoever. I don't do a to-do list. I've stopped that about 3 years ago. The most important things will get done. If you want something to be done, put it in your calendar. That's how this call happened. It got put in a calendar and then it happens. If it's not in the calendar, I'm not going to predict that it'll happen.
I'm super grateful that this call did happen because it's lovely to talk to you and meet you finally. Just as a parting thing, are there any, we're going to leave some links to your books and your stuff in the show notes and your podcast because I think it's fantastic. Do you have any other books or recommended reading that you would recommend to our audience?
In the type of topics we're talking about, 80-20 is good from Richard Koch, but there are lots of other good books. There's books on how to take better notes that help me a lot to systemize things. There's probably easy ones for a real estate agent to get their hands on in Australia would be some of the instant books by Brad Sugars. They're quite helpful. They've got frameworks and checklists in them, like anything from Jay Abraham or Dan Kennedy. He has a no BS time management for entrepreneurs, which is quite good. There's also The Ultimate Sales Machine by Chet Holm for getting some of those disciplines in place, like being able to close your door for a while where you can actually get work done. Probably, I think that's the book where I first heard about that.
Now, you've got a live event coming up soon called Superfast Business Live. Do you think that that would be something that would be of interest to real estate agents around Australia?
I do think it would be, if you're interested in some of the things we've talked about. The topic that I think is really interesting for real estate agents would be the licensing discussion. I've got Bob Serling talking about licensing. That has been the big business win for me. Like, considering I have a similar background coming from a sales and a performance-based life, what I do now is I go out in business, I find businesses I can help, and I take a percentage of revenue as a fee to help them grow. That means I can work with any business anywhere in the world who I deem to be the type of business that I can help improve. So if you took your real estate agent skills outside the industry and applied them to that business model, I think you could be making millions of dollars a year without having to do your old job if you didn't want to. That would be something I would go to listen to or learn about. I watched this guy present 10 years ago in San Diego, and that's when I first got an idea about how you could start using a little more arbitrage. And you know, geo arbitrage is a real thing. A lot of Australian businesses are using overseas teams in the back end of their business. If I was a real estate agent, I would absolutely have a whole back end team in the Philippines, and that will save you a fortune on administration costs. Then I would also focus on hiring people who are not salespeople and systemizing the way that I teach them. So inside my own membership, I've given people the exact system I use to build the top selling Mercedes-Benz sales team of people who'd never sold before, and the whole system from hiring to training. And that's something that I'll do too. I would stop hiring real estate salespeople to sell real estate, and I would get people who come from hotels or who are airline pilots who can follow systems, who are personable and actually care about people and can follow the system. They will dominate.
It's a really interesting point that you're making there too, because I think if you want to learn to do something differently and go to something outside the industry where you're learning a heap of stuff about digital marketing and networking with some really interesting people, you never know what you might come up with.
This event is all about the people. We've been running these events for over 10 years. Most of the people coming, that's about 150 people coming, including the speakers and probably 20 people from my highest level program, where the average revenue in my high-level program is over $3 million a year. These people are really nice, switched-on people, and they exchange information, and they're very open to new people coming in and learning about it. Because, like, what we do is pretty much alien to the rest of the world. You know, we're not talking super tactical stuff in these sort of events. Like, it's not a laptop fill-in worksheet type thing. It's more of a really giving you some incredible strategies and ideas and starting points to continue on with. And that's what I like about them. That's why the audience sort of, they keep demanding these events each year. So I put them together. They're a little bit of work for me once a year, but I do get such a good benefit from it. The audience coming together, it's like a super meetup. And also we do record the trainings and we put them inside our membership. So it's another reason I do that event.
I had a look at it online and it sounds fantastic. So if you see my head pop up there, please don't be surprised.
Well, look, I meet every single person who comes. And the other thing we do that's special, and they don't really do this in the States at events, is we provide the meals and also dinner and drinks. And so the networking function is a real centerpiece for this event, and it's a huge hit.
Cool. So links for all of those things in the show notes. James, thank you so much for spending some time with us and generously sharing your knowledge today. There's a lot of takeaways there about how to work less and make more and think about your business differently. I hope the gang come and check out Superfast Business Live. And if there was one thing that you would like to leave the audience with as a result of listening to this podcast, what would it be?
I think the most important thing is look outside your industry. Like, just question everything. Why do you do this way? Is it because that's the way it's always been done? Is it because every other agent does it? That's usually a terrible idea to do it. I know that some of the things that I've said in this podcast won't make me popular with real estate agents, but I'm saying this with the disclaimer that I came from a dinosaur industry of the car industry where they always did things the same way. They were just pretty ordinary and have a bad public reputation. But I came from that industry and I was the one who cut a different path in that industry. Even if there was 8 salespeople, I would always sell far more than the others. I brought stuff from outside. So go and get stuff from outside the industry, whether it's from my industry or any other industry. It doesn't matter. There's probably every part of your process could be done in a better way. I notice how many things are done differently than the way we used to and how many things could be improved, stratospherically if they just became aware of a better way, which is out there.
Absolutely, it is. I 100% agree with you. James Tramko, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.